I'm Luke.
And I'm Jason.
We're the guys from That Film Stew, and this is our latest episode where we look at some of the most recent news stories from the world of film and television.
In today's show, the Oscars have been and gone. Who were the big winners and how was the show? We've got trailers for Alien, Romulus and The Crow. Scream 7 is set to say, hello, Sydney, once again. And we get clarification on where Peacemaker fits in the new DCU.
Before we get into it, make sure you subscribe and download this podcast on SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, wherever you can find us, and feel free to leave us a review.
And follow us on social media. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram as That Film Stew Podcast.
So Jason, how about you kick things off? What is our first movie topic?
Well, I suppose the Oscars happened since we last chatted. So let's start with that and just dive into pretty much like who won all that. I think it's the first time in a long time you've watched the whole show.
Like, let me say this. It is the first time ever I have watched. Listen, the whole show. I've seen most of the show in recent years. And then, like most people, ended up just watching the best bits online. But what happened this year, not only were they covering a lot of films I've actually seen and that most people have actually seen. Thank you, Barbenheimer. Because really, like if you look at, you know, nobody at the Oscars, there's a handful that general audiences have seen, but then it's not too broad where I feel like not just the movies that were nominated, but the presenters. Like it just had a lot more going for it than previous years. So I'm like, do you know what? I can put aside 3 hours and watch the Oscars.
It is a long slog. I try to watch as much of the shows as possible each year when it comes out. It's all very exciting. This year in particular, I felt obliged to try and watch it live. Like got up like at the crack of dawn because we're on the other side of the bloody planet. I was making lunch for my kid to take him to school. Had it streaming, you know, on the 7 Plus app or whatever it's called. Then had to go to work, so just had it streaming on the phone, obviously only listening to audio. Then got to work, and I hope no one's listening, just watching it on my phone as I'm like checking emails and pulling report. So look, I watched the whole thing. It was great. And I must say, over recent years, especially the pandemic, like era times, not their fault, I suppose, the show quality hasn't been great. But I think this year they really nailed it. They had fun with it. They still had the prestige that the Oscars should have. Jimmy Kimmel did a pretty decent job hosting.
He did, yeah.
A lot of his jokes and humor were like, kind of like inside the bubble of the movie world kind of humor. It wasn't all public kind of, like the normal gossip kind of trade things that people know about. There was a lot of inside stuff, which I appreciate. I'm like, you got to be into the movies and all the inside, you know, the shit we talk about.
Yeah.
To get a lot of it. He did well. What they did with the presenters of the awards, you know, like who they paired up, some of it was just, you know, historical stuff where it was like, hey, they've worked together before. Like they're a pair that goes, or it's a sneaky little marketing thing for an upcoming movie. Like, we'll actually use the Emily Blunt and the Ryan Gosling pairing. Number one, it's the pairing of two supporting actors from Barbie and Oppenheimer. But at the
Which
same time,
fun.
It's also a marketing tool for the Fall Guy coming out. It's like, damn, that's genius. I just found every pairing was bloody Danny DeVito and Arnold Schwarzenegger.
That's the
with the Michael Keaton gag.
That's the one, isn't it? When they first came out, everybody must have thought twins, but no, that's not what they're doing.
It was great.
That's not what they're doing. They're doing Batman, and when they cut to there, he is. There's Batman, the son of a bitch, or where?
Son of a bitch.
That's it. Oh man, it was so much fun, and then just that glare.
Get you after the governor's ball.
the glare that Keaton was giving them back, and he'd already presented earlier on in the show. It came out with Catherine O'Hara. You know, they've got Beetlejuice 2 coming.
You've
got the Danny Elfman Beetlejuice theme. That was fun, and because they were going to do the Batman gag after, it was Keaton that brought his home ascot from home, because when asked, he said he wanted to Bruce Wayne it up. He wanted to have a little costume change. It's little things like that. And the thing with John Mulaney, and he's doing his bit, and then it all of a sudden just becomes all about Field of Dreams. And I'm like, do you know what? If Kimmel is ready to step down, and I think he's still got some more shows in him, but if he gets to the point when he's ready, Mulaney would be a great person to take over. He's so personable, funny, his time, you know, he's a great comedian. I think he could be...
He's got his finger on the pulse as well with, like, with the humour and the...
He really does, like, it's...
But, yeah, again, some great little gags. The thing with... why am I slipping on name? John Cena comes out, you know, there's a whole gag about, like, you know, someone doing a nudie run, and he just pops out, he's awkward about it, then there's the giant envelope, and then just the delivery of costumes are important. It's like, wow, this was a whole setup for an award. Like, it's like, somebody put a lot of effort into writing these scenarios and gags, or multiple people, and I think they did a... They just did a good job. It was a fun, I'll say a fun morning, but obviously it's a fun night for those who are actually there.
It really was. And you're right, like, so many good gags, but something that was said that wasn't a gag and left some people stunned. Al Pacino. My eyes see Oppenheimer. Really, Al? It was like, what? Yeah. It was like 10 nominees. Like, just tell us who won.
Apparently he was told not to list the nominees because they're listed sort of throughout the show, but it's it just felt like a very underwhelming
thing.
But hey, look, at least he didn't say La La Land or something.
Yeah, that's it. But you know what? Oppenheimer, 7 Oscars, including Best Picture, Best Actor, Best Director. And, you know, we both really liked that film. Like, I think everybody that has seen Oppenheimer, such a good movie. And just seeing everybody involved be congratulated, you know, all the different departments, and just seeing Christopher Nolan up there with his wife and producing partner Emma Thomas, and, you know, what's that gag? She has produced all my films and my children. Good stuff.
It's great. Wait, there was and now obviously I get, you know, like, when you get the previous winner to usually present and hand over the Oscar to the next one, but there was something really magical and just very awesome for Christopher Nolan to receive his first Best Director thing. I mean, it's just been a long time coming, hasn't it? But his first Best Director Oscar handed to him from Steven Spielberg. I'm like, damn. Like, if there was any other director to present that to you, who else do you bloody pick?
I mean, it's perfect, isn't it?
I mean, if I was to ever win one, I never would. But, like, I mean,
you'd have to make a film first. The one.
Yeah, please, Steven Spielberg, give me the Oscar. That would be fantastic.
Yeah, I mean,
I'd just steal one. I'd take a plastic whatever.
But that's going back to the right people, not just the right people paired, but the right people, like, hosting. Like, when they've got previous winners coming out, and honestly, I loved seeing Nick Cage up on that stage. I really, really did. Oh, man, it was just... Ah, there's so many great moments, and that's why I made the decision. I'm going to watch it this year.
Yeah, what they did with the best supporting and the best lead actor and actress awards, how they had 5 previous winners presenting, and, like, the ones that they chose, they either had someone that, like, you know, how they paired them up with who they announced and gave a little spiel about the nominee. It's like they had either someone who had worked with that person professionally or actually had a personal relationship with them, like, in the real world. So then when they were saying, look, so-and-so, you're nominated for this category, and then they're saying something about them, there's actually an emotional, like, beat to it.
Yep.
There's, I'm like, oh my God, they're presenting an award listing nominees, and it's like, I'm getting all, like, worked up. I'm like, I'm feeling shit. The bloody Oscars, like, what is this? A bang up job, man.
And that's it. Yeah, it was a great show, and it was. And you're thinking, oh, I hope this person wins, or I hope this movie wins. And for the most part, it was happening. So that's always satisfying.
Yeah,
as well. It really, but, yeah,
it's a lot of the main categories did have some fairly shoo-in wins. There were some that were questionable, but most of the ones that I predicted pretty, I'm not tooting my own horn, but most of, I think it was just, there was just such an outstanding, very clear winners this year, which I think was the advantage. I think one of the only ones I kind of misjudged was best special effects, but to be fair, I haven't seen Godzilla Minus One, but holy shit, good job.
And I haven't, I really want to see it.
Godzilla toys and their Godzilla shoes. Yeah. They're crazy, but I love them and they're fantastic. Fantastic people. But let's list some winners so we don't have to spend too much time on the Oscars. We can move in, talk about some other crazy things. Obviously, we talked about Best Picture going to Oppenheimer. I mean, to me, I would have given it to Poor Things, but that's fine. Crazy movie. Best Director, we said Christopher Nolan for Oppenheimer. Best Actress, Emma Stone in Poor Things. So well deserved.
Well deserved.
So well deserved. She really good in that. Like, just insane. Best Actor, Cillian Murphy for Oppenheimer.
Could I have to stop you there? We all know it's pronounced Killian. You got to get it right. Absolutely.
You know what? As I was saying it, I was like, don't say Killian, because every time you say Killian, it's actually the other one.
So, I mean, they even made a joke about his name at the Oscars, but yeah, it is. It's Killian.
Awesome. All right. Best Supporting Actress, Daveen Joy Randolph from The Holdovers. And I'm so glad something Holdovers won. And yeah, it's great that it was Randolph, because have you seen The Holdovers yet?
I still haven't. I really want to. And that's why Cage was up on the stage. He was the nomination for Paul Giamatti. That's why Cage was up there. I do want to see The Holdovers. Since watching that first trailer, it's been on my list. I just haven't got around to it.
Now, Best Supporting Actor, I knew it was going to be Robert Downey Jr., and it was, and again, well-deserved, absolutely. I did have a little inkling, though. I was like, it would be really cool if Mark Ruffalo won, because what he was doing in Poor Things, just so out of the norm for him. I just thought he was doing something special there. But at the same time, Robert Downey Jr., and I think, was this his second win, or was it his first?
Yeah, I think the first one, it was Chaplin, wasn't it?
Right, and he actually won that, yeah?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. And that came out in like the 90s.
And that would have been a lead.
He was the lead in that. But it's one of those where, like, Robert Downey Jr. is nominated for Oppenheimer, and it's like, he's not going to not win it. And it's one of those things where it might not necessarily just be for this film, but for previous works as well. You know, like what happened with Leonardo DiCaprio in The Revenant, where, you know, people are like, well, that's a good film, but his other films are better. But it's about time we gave him an Oscar. I think, you know,
kind of thinking that negates stuff. So don't be doing that.
But it gets talked about, you know, I'm not the only one that says things like that. But but Mark Ruffalo really is fantastic in Poor Things. You know, I watched that without seeing a single trailer, and what an experience that movie is. I had no idea what it was. Like, yeah. Yeah. And Mark Ruffalo, too. You're right.
Well, like, I had a basic idea, but
his character in it, you know, he's so, you know, he's introduced and he's so confident, but they end up being so pathetic and down on his luck. But yeah, Ruffalo.
By the end of the movie, he just kind of turned into his normal Mark Ruffalo character.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate. I want to highlight Best Adapted Screenplay. Even though Barbie was nominated, it shouldn't have been in this category because it's not adapted, you sons of bitches. But American Fiction winning this, fantastic. 100%. Very happy. Well deserved.
Great film. Animated feature, great film. Yeah.
Oh, you checked that one out too. That's awesome. Best Animated Feature, The Boy and the Heron. Saw that one coming. Sorry, Spidey. You won last time. It's all good. You can have a sit this one out. Come back for the third. Best Cinematography, Oppenheimer. Best Editing, Oppenheimer. And probably, how many other ones did Oppenheimer win? We list all seven of them. There are a few more. We won't go through all of them. Lots of technical awards, costuming, bits and pieces. Probably Oppenheimer. I didn't write that one down. Anyway, the Oscars, man. Good show.
And great really show, happy. Even. That's got great show. It was, yeah.
Great show, yes. Yeah. All right.
I may even watch it next year. But I thoroughly enjoyed it.
I may even watch it again.
Nah, I've seen it. I've seen it. I'll probably watch the Arnie and DeVito clip a couple more times on YouTube. But other than that,
I feel like I've watched it like five times. I'm a bit weird.
So good. Oh, mate, it's just perfect.
You son of a bitch.
Perfect. Oh, no. But you know what? Some fans, there's no pleasing them. They're like, well, actually, George Clooney was Arnie's Batman.
Get off it. Yeah.
It's like, that's not the point. Anyway, that's the Oscars. Now on to a James Bond rumor. Aaron Taylor Johnson is rumored to have been offered the role.
Yeah, this was coming out of it was reported in The Sun from one source, and other outlets were basically saying, yeah, our source is The Sun, and going with it. So it was all coming from the same place. The BBC has come out and said, oh, they've got an insider, and they're saying, no, it's not true. This is going to be a story where it's we're kind of going to have to wait and see if this pans out to be true or not. But sometimes things like this slip.
I know, but they're also going to have to kind of say, if it isn't true, it isn't true. They have to come out and say that because, or are they just testing the waters? How I feel on this casting, if it is true, I like James Bond. I like Aaron Taylor Johnson. I just don't know about him being Bond. He can do comedy, action, drama. He's a good actor, but I just don't know. I don't know about him for Bond.
I think he could be one of those ones where he surprises you. I've seen him in dramatic stuff and I'm like, okay, so he's we know he can act, we know he can do stuff. It's just sometimes the material that he's given. And dare I say, look, when the upcoming Craven comes out, that ain't going to do him any favors.
I just think, because you've just said there, things we've seen him in so many different things. And to be fair, I'd seen Daniel Craig in a Tomb Raider movie. I'd seen him in Layer Cake, so I had seen him in things, but he wasn't oh, look, it's Daniel Craig. So when he was cast as Bond, oh, okay. Even though I think it was, let's go back to The Sun. I'm pretty sure they were the ones that referred to him as James Blonde when he was James first Blonde. Cast.
Blonde Bond. Outrageous.
UK tabloids, honestly. But I don't know. I just feel like I've seen Aaron Taylor Johnson in so many things. Last year, he was great in Bullet Train. He's a good actor. I like him. And he can do the comedy, the drama, the action. He can do it all. But then to suddenly have him be Bond, I just think, I don't know. I mean, hey, could surprise us, but from what you're saying, the source, it could end up be a nothing rumor anyway. It's just interesting that we've gone all this time and heard nothing. It's been such a long time.
It also comes down to what type of Bond are they going with? We've heard things that they're going for a younger, and he's aging now, but he presents quite young, he comes across as quite youthful. So yeah, it could work. And do you know what? All credit to him. A lot of the roles we see him in got a fake American accent on. So, got it. What was that Beatles movie he was in? Which
Nowhere Boy. Nowhere Boy. Yeah. He played John Lennon in that.
Maybe. I mean, that was probably a fake accent as well, because he's probably doing a Liverpool thing.
Well,
is he from Liverpool?
He isn't, but John Lennon is. Yes, he was doing a Liverpoolian accent in that. But I've just had a quick look. He is 33. He was born June 1990. So there you
go. Older than
me. Actually, I thought he was older than that, if I'm honest. But I think it's that thing where you've had someone that's been around for a long time, because he has now, before Kick-Ass, and that's what really started to get him known.
Well, in Kick-Ass, he looked like a teenager.
He did, yes. He looked a lot younger.
And now we see him and stuff, and it's he's a man. He's
Craven. He's all man.
He's just matured. He's just matured like normal people do, unlike me, who still looks like a 14-year-old. All right.
Anyway, it's a rumor. It's James Bond, so we had to spend time on it. Needed to be addressed.
All right. Well, let's spend some time on the Alien Romulus trailer. And oh my God, blood, There's screaming. There's face huggers. I'm going to say his name wrong because I always do. Fede Alvarez.
That sounds right.
I'm going with it.
The director of Don't Breathe, the Evil Dead remake, which is such a gritty, dark horror film, but done very
well. Is that the one with like the tongue cutting, or is that the Evil Dead Rises?
This is the one where it was nothing to do with Ash Williams, and it was a whole new thing. Although you did get like that post-credit scene with Bruce Campbell. But anyway, but yes.
Went nowhere.
He's the director of that film. What's interesting about this, you know, we had the Predator prequel movie that was a 20th Studios film, ended up being an exclusive for Hulu in the US, Disney Plus for us here in Australia. And it seemed as though this new Alien film was going the same way, straight to cinemas. This is going to be a theatrical release. What a pleasant surprise.
And do you know why it's pleasant? Because this looks effing sick. Like,
doesn't it?
Just the it's only a teaser and it's snippets. Hopefully, the tone that this is presenting is what we get in the film, but it looks terrifying. This looks like, hey, we're in tight spaces. There's something trying to kill us. Genuine fear. Like, just is the only line of dialogue run? Is that the only thing that's said? Or is there stuff after?
No, I think you're right. Yeah, it's mainly just screaming and
it begins. It's sort of panning through like the tunnel thing, and then it, like, you just see that the capsule, and there's just blood in there, and then just run. Like, oh my god. Oh,
I mean, going back to
holy shit,
the first Alien film. It is a horror film in space. I mean, yes, it's a sci-fi, the spaceships and everything else, but it's a horror film.
The other one, the second one, it's more, as amazing as it is, it's more of an action film. And then you get more sci-fi as it keeps going. And then
so this
movie is like very heavy sci-fi.
Absolutely. This looks more like the first Alien film.
Go back to that horror, which is fantastic. Holy shit. No, I'm really excited. I'll be honest, if you said to me like, hey, look, there's a new Alien movie coming out, which, you know, you have done many a times, how interested am I usually? I'm just like, okay, yeah, it'd be cool. Like, it's all right. Yeah. This trailer has just like pinged me, man. Like, it looks.
I know, but it looks fantastic. But you look at like the most recent Alien films, Alien Covenant, Prometheus, and it's just like a different thing. It's all those mysterious aliens. Do you want me to tell you how they came to be? Oh, not really. I just want to see them in a horror setting and big white men. Nah, don't need that. Need this.
So hopefully this is a return to what it should be. And we just get this. Nice. Even if this is a once off, like, and then they can never replicate this again, at least if this one's good, we get this. And that's fun.
That's it. That's good. The Crow remake trailer shows Bill Skarsgård in action as Eric Draven. We talked about this movie last time. We'd seen those first look images. Now we've got the trailer. Towards the end, he kind of looks a bit like The Crow. But I don't know. I'm generally surprised whenever I see the physicality of Bill Skarsgård. I don't know, like when I'd seen him in things before it, and then obviously he's under all those, you know, the prosthetics and whatnot, he never comes across as a big guy. I mean, now he does. You know, we've had that recent trailer for Boy Kills World. He was in the fourth John Wick movie, and we've seen him do action in that. But he's got a big, I don't know, like he's such a big, tall guy. But this movie, like, it feels like it's the early 2000s again, just like we got with Madam Web. Like, we've just talked about Alien Romulus, that it looks like it shares DNA with that first Alien film from the 70s film, but doesn't feel dated. This trailer feels dated, just like Madam Web did. I mean, I'm sure it's going to be fine, but doesn't really feel like.
Are you sure? Are you sure, though? How confident are you?
What would you think to this trailer?
This is what I'll say as a note of positivity. The trailer was better than those images we talked about in the last show that we got. Having said that, though, I mean, yeah, it just felt really bland, and I guess, like, yeah, that dated feel of this looks like something from 20 years ago.
It does. Like,
which was, you know, it was modern enough, but it just, I don't know, I had this sense of just like, hey, yeah, it's kind of like that edgy gothic type that isn't really that cool. It's just like someone trying really hard to be edgy, but I was like, you're not, you're just a little bit pissy.
They've like, been trying to
wearing all these things. Yeah, you're trying.
They've been trying hard to remake The Crow for years, and this is it. I don't know.
You would think after so many attempts, they would, when they eventually do it, they do it right. But this seems more like, oh my God, we've run out of so much steam trying so hard to get this up and running that we've just made a deal with ourselves to just put out the first thing that we managed to scrape together. And that's the sense I'm getting with this. It's just very meh looking. Yeah, it's very meh.
It is. My wife, like, she's seen this trailer and she likes the 90s movie, you know, the original with Brandon Lee. And I'm like, yeah, but in this new one, like, you know, for the most part, like, he doesn't really look like The Crow. And my wife's like, but, you know, that was that a movie back then. He doesn't really need to. And I'm like,
and it doesn't.
No, but Bill. I'm like, no, he does. I'm like, you've got the original comic, James O'Barr. He only ever looks like The Crow. Like, that's the look of the character. And she's like, oh, okay. And she walks away from me at that point. I put comics into it. But it's like, that's the look of the character. And, you know, he starts like as the black coming out of the eyes and, you know, towards the end of the trailer. Yes, and maybe we'll get more of it, but he's just got short hair and he's still got those Jared Leto Joker tattoos. I just don't know about this one.
What's important is, even if they change the look, is the look that they're now presenting, is that still like engaging and, like, it's, I don't know, is it appealing? Is it like, oh my God, like, I'm impressed, I'm intimidated, whatever feeling they're trying to sell. I mean, using Bill Skarsgård as an example, like, take Pennywise, the clown, you know, like, very free from the miniseries and the newer movies, like, a very different look. One could say, oh, one is classic, one is this new yucky modern version, but it's like, hey, are you still getting the sense of dread and fear and scare from it? Is it effective? It's like, yes, so it still works. I think whatever they're trying to portray with him, it only matters, are they doing that? And I don't know what they're trying to make us feel, but I look at him and I'm like, he just looks like a thug.
Yeah, just have to wait and see, I guess. I'm sure it'll be fine. Yeah, I'm sure it'll be a perfectly fine movie.
Perfectly fine. All right. Well, Neve Campbell, she's come back. She's coming back. She'll reprise her role as Sydney Prescott in Scream 7. It was a scary couple of years there where we didn't have her in the franchise. Didn't know what was going to happen. It's good that she's back, in all honesty, but they've struck a deal. Obviously, they've given her some money.
It's good that she's back. But this announcement for me, it was just a matter of time. Like, yeah. They clearly had three movies planned with the sisters from the first two movies, or, you know, the last two movies. They're no longer coming back. So it makes sense that they go back to Neve Campbell, reverse a truck full of money onto a lawn.
Absolutely.
And she's coming back.
And she'll be joined by the franchise's original creator, Kevin Williamson, who will direct the film.
And that's it, it was going to be Christopher Landon who was going to be directing the Scream movie, but he left the project with the two stars. Yeah, Christopher Williamson.
Yeah, so the question is, like, would they tie it into the previous two movies still in some capacity, just switch out some characters, or will this just start almost fresh in a way, if that makes sense?
I mean, that
thematically,
that seems like the better way to go. Like, you don't want to go out of your way to connect it to characters that clearly are not going to be in it anymore.
Yeah, and I mean, I can still see, you know, like Hayden Panettiere coming back, or like, you know, there were some other, you know, like teenager characters in the last two films that could show up still, but I'll be honest, do you know their names?
I do not.
You don't. So, maybe Randy's, no,
Randy's niece and nephew.
Oh, that's right. But what were their names?
I don't know. So,
but they
maybe
could still pop up, though. They could
yeah, I mean, there's the option to do that, but I think just bring Sydney back and then just start a new thing. All right, that's it for the biggest film news stories. Now we'll wrap up with some smaller film news stories.
Yeah, don't know how you feel about this, but a little bit disappointing. The Batman 2 has been delayed 1 year and will now release in cinemas on October 2nd, 2026, which, I don't know, are you busy that year? If you sorted your calendars out?
I mean, it's almost 2027, isn't it? By the time October comes around. Yeah. So we don't know.
You want to say it's almost 2035. I'm like, no. Don't be like that, mate. March.
We don't know why it's moved. Was it because of the writer's strike? We don't know. But we don't know why. But what it has done by moving, though, exclusively, 2025 is the year of Superman. We were going to get Superman and the Batman Part 2, but now Superman has the whole year.
That's pretty bonkers.
So,
and it goes up against the one Marvel movie, Deadpool and Wolverine. So there we go. And we're not counting the Sony movies.
Hang on. It's 2024. So Deadpool and Wolverine comes out this July. Superman comes out next year, 2025.
Oh, are there any Marvel movies coming out next year? Scratch everything I said. Everything's wrong. It's good. The Batman's taking too long, which is upsetting because the first one was fantastic. I want more, but we do have the Penguin.
Exactly right. So the Penguin comes out this year. Anyway, we need to move away from release dates. It's too confusing. Hey, listen, what we are getting is a live action Teen Titans movie. It's in the works at DC Studios. Got to be honest, this caught me by surprise because in a DC universe that doesn't even have a Justice League, is going to have a Teen Titans. But that's okay. I'm sure James Gunn knows exactly what he's,
so, all I can say, what he's doing. They just need to explain how, why.
I mean, we know.
It's part of the DCU.
It's all connected. It's all connected. We know that we're getting a Batman Brave and the Bold movie, and Robin is going to be in that. That's what it's called, isn't it? The Brave and the Bold. I don't even know anymore. There's so many balls in the air. But we are getting Batman and Robin together. So Robin's a Teen Titan, but the rest of the characters, like Kid Flash, Aqualad, Speedy, Wonder Girl, all of them. So I'm generally surprised that we're getting a Teen Titans live action movie in that continuity. And the screenwriter of the Supergirl Woman of Tomorrow, Anna Noguera, she's writing the screenplay. So there you go. She's already at work on it.
Maybe Supergirl will be in the Teen Titans as well.
I don't know. Yes, maybe.
Sure. Oh, wonderful. Bloody Teen Titans. All right. Sony Pictures has revealed the third installment of the Tom Hardy-led Venom series will be called Venom: The Last Dance.
That tells me everything I need to know about what the tone of that movie is going to be like.
Look, a title actually does nothing to a movie. It doesn't change anything. If anything, it's just a marketing thing. But what does this title mean? I don't know. Hopefully it actually has something profound. I doubt it.
It means they're promising a trilogy and no more. I mean, it's a silly title. It is a silly title. I mean, it's just silly. The Last Dance. It doesn't sound like
there's gonna be a point. It's gonna be right before the third act, before they go into like the big final battle, and it'll be Eddie Brock and Venom, and it'll be like, "Are you ready? Yeah, one last dance." And then
that'd make the title worth
Venom
it.
Up and they. Yeah, that's going to happen. If that's not in the movie, I'm going to transfer you $5.
But there we go. Anyway, episode title, or film title, should I say. So that's cool. A new Super Mario Brothers movie is officially in the works at Nintendo and Illumination. The animated film will release in cinemas on April 3rd, 2026.
I mean, the worst kept secret. Everyone knew they were going to be doing another Super Mario Brothers movie, but it hadn't been officially greenlit. We had March 10th, Mario Day. And didn't I message you like the day before or on the day? I was like,
on the day, you did, yeah.
On the day, but on the day in Australia, which actually meant the day before because it hadn't actually ticked over yet. And I was just like, yes, like if they're going to announce something, hopefully they officially greenlight the movie. And I mean, I think they also announced some like Lego Mario Kart thing or something. But other than that, it wasn't a movie. Other than that, yeah, this news. So I'm like, cool, nothing else to announce. That's fine. But this is good. So bring it on. Scarlett Johansson has been offered the lead role in the upcoming Jurassic World movie. And in your notes here, you've written Jurassic City. I'm not going to tell you, that was debunked weeks ago. It is not going to be called Jurassic City.
If you were to read what I said in its entirety, I put a question mark at the end. I just wanted to put it out there because it had
been... answering you with no.
It wasn't a question to you directly. It was just in general, like, hey. Anyway, so Jurassic City, that's fine. That's fine. But it'd been talked about. But the main takeaway there, Scarlett Johansson, potentially, you know, having the lead role. How would you feel about that? You on board?
Sure.
You just want dinosaurs, don't you? You don't care who the people are.
It doesn't matter. Like, at the end of the day, if it's Scarlett Johansson or just someone else, as long as the character that they're playing is grounded and feels like a real person, that's all I want. I don't want to, don't Chris Pratt her up. Don't have her come in and start doing superhero poses and stuff. Like, don't start punching walls.
Although she does them very well, but I agree. I agree with you completely.
Just make her a real person with like feelings and characterization. That's all I want. But look, she's a big name. So it's fine. It's a big name and she's good at stuff. I'm fine with it.
Okay, good. Well, that's it for the film news. Now on to TV news.
Well, first up, we've got the trailer for the Star Wars series, The Acolyte, which brings Jedi galore and a Sith blade to the High Republic era. Now, can I just say, before we got this little trailer, which gave us a bit of insight into the show, there was a cool little poster that was revealed, which usually happens. You get a poster, then you get a little trailer or TV or trailer teaser spot or something. But this poster, it's a lightsaber, but like a disabled one. And then there's this like streak of blood. This was selling me a certain tone, especially with like the premise of what this show is supposed to be. You know, basically, you know, seeing the Star Wars universe from a particular point of view, as an Obi-Wan might have said once before, like the Sith, like the seeing it from the dark side, or at least seeing it from someone becoming Sith, like what's that all about? And I was like, holy shit, if that's the poster, cannot wait for this trailer, which it looks really lame.
Oh, really? That is not where I thought you were going at all.
There's cool stuff because there's lightsabers and there's shit happening. And I'm like, okay, cool. We're going to see lightsabers doing stuff. But it kind of has like, and look, I'm a Harry Potter fan. I like Harry Potter. I like, you know, I'm all for watching like a young adult kind of centric thing. But this trailer presents a show that feels like a YA novel. There's a lot of young characters. The dialogue exchange, you know, and them standing in the woods talking about something or the forest or whatever it seems like, even like the shots of like this castle, you know, swooping shot. I'm just like, oh, this feels, I don't know, this feels like the next installment of Harry Potter, but for some reason they have lightsabers. And that was my takeaway.
I'm genuinely surprised to have that be your takeaway. I agree with you. Amazing poster. Blood instead of a red lightsaber. Fantastic teaser. And I've got to be honest, I wasn't too hot on this as a concept, as a show. But I think it looks good. I wasn't getting Harry Potter vibes. I mean, I was getting the prequel trilogy vibes, like when you're seeing all the young Jedis or the younglings. I mean, this show is set 100 years before Phantom Menace, so we know where it takes place. I mean, narratively, it's said to be similar to Andor. We know we're getting 8 half-an-hour episodes. It has been pitched as a multi-season show, so expect more of this if it does well. But I think this looks good, and I think this does feel more like Andor. I mean, that does seem a bit more grown up, so I get what you're saying with the YA feel with parts of it. But I don't know, this trailer won me over. I went from not being too interested, but I would have watched it at some point, to, okay, you're giving me Carrie-Anne Moss. It's a Jedi. I didn't know that was a thing I needed. I'm like, wow, she looks cool. And then just getting flashbacks to her Matrix days. I thought this looked good, and I am still shocked at where you took us after talking so positively about that poster.
Oh, but it was just how giant, like, you compare that poster to what's presented in the trailer, and it's just like, is this a poster for the same show? Like, and look, maybe the trailer is just presenting the wrong thing, and the show is badass and it's brutal and there's some dark shit in it, and I'm gonna be like, yeah. But like, this seems like the equivalent of, you know, hey, we're doing a movie about how this kid became Voldemort. Like, that's what I'm thinking they're going to do. It's just going to be these kids. Like, I don't know. It's just a bunch of them sort of standing around. They're like, oh, we've got to solve this mystery. It's like, cool. Like, they're going to discover things. They're going to, I can already see it. And, you know, as you said, now, when you say half an hour episodes, Disney Plus, that's like 20 minutes. So we're going to get
potentially
like 20, I mean, 25 minute episodes.
No, come on. I reckon.
Live action.
I reckon half an hour of screen time. But you're right, though. Disney, wow. You press play on a Disney Plus show, it doesn't go for as long as it looks like it's going to go for. Because it's like 10, 15 minutes.
Even if we're actually getting half an hour of actual episode, 8 episodes, like, what live action show is half an hour that isn't a sitcom? Like, I don't know. Like, it's like, why are they doing that?
Star Wars shows, Disney Plus shows, like, whether it's
why?
Star Wars,
but that's
Marvel,
the thing. Like, that is the, you can't say
that is,
oh,
the new runtime.
Disney Plus model, well, it's a shit model, it's stupid.
Like, but it's not, yeah, okay, it's not exclusively, we're having a bit of a row here, it's not exclusively Disney Plus model, it's a streaming model, isn't it? It's not having to,
and it's scummy. It's stick, a scummy thing.
But it's not having to stick to that network time slot. But anyway, we're getting away from Star Wars, and that's The Acolyte. So we've had the trailer. We've had that great poster, and I think we should probably,
all excitement I have for this show is gone from this.
Just,
from,
mate,
this trailer.
Just go back, look at that poster some more, and maybe wait for a second trailer.
Or just look at that poster, nothing else until... I should just go back to that rule of just not watching trailers. You know, it's been like 6 years since I've done that.
I'm just going to go to the next story. All right.
Okay, probably good enough to move
on.
This was going to make me angry too.
James Gunn confirms Peacemaker Season 1 is not canon to the DCU. Season 2 will take place after the events of Superman. Does it make sense? Not really. But you know what? I like John Cena. He's great as Peacemaker.
It's a good show.
If that's what needs to happen for it to make some kind of sense, then sure. but at least,
but like,
he's clarified.
Don't call it season. It's not going to be called Season 2, though. They're going to call it like Peacemaker something.
Maybe something. That's the so way to like, go. Yeah, maybe that's what they do when it comes out. But yeah, we're getting more Peacemaker, and that's where it takes place.
So it's just irritating. Like, so if someone wanted to start watching this Peacemaker in quotation season 2, would they need to have watched season 1?
Or the DCEU? Yes or no? We don't know.
Or, yeah, the particular, you know, the Suicide Squad, like... It's not canon, but like, Is any of it relevant then?
When James Gunn,
he's literally saying it's not canon.
When James Gunn is getting ready for his Gods and Monsters announcement saying, this is it, moving forward, we're drawing a line in the sand. And he did not.
He sprinkled that line with like...
Viola salt, Davis as Amanda Waller. Yeah, she's back. But anyway, that's Peacemaker season two.
All right. Okay, look, this makes me happy. The Bear has been renewed for season four. Yay. Look, some good TV news has arrived. Season three and four are currently being shot back to back in Chicago. The only part about that bit kind of worries me is that I thought they were a lot further along with season three. But look, TV is different. So maybe when they're shooting still. I don't know. I expected this show in the next couple months. So hopefully they get it. Have you started it?
I still haven't. Everybody tells me how amazing and anxiety inducing it is. And I've just not been in the right headspace to watch it. It just sounds too stressful.
No. But it works. And do you know what? I will say, there are some longer episodes, but those episodes work. It's like the half an hour kind of structure. So, yeah, and it's drama, I suppose. Anyway. Yeah, good. Happy.
Okay. Upload has been renewed for a fourth and final season by Prime Video. And I'm currently working my way through season three. It's a good show.
Yeah.
It is a good show, great concept. I really like the cast. So it's good to hear.
Characters.
Yeah, absolutely.
Interesting characters.
Like in the world, the bellboys are great. It's such a fun show. So it's good to hear that they're able to finish it with a fourth and final season.
Yeah, I always love it when they know, because we're not going to get some sort of stupid, like, oh, we set something up for like, if we were, you know, that whole thing, you end up with a cliffhanger and then it's unresolved and you just hate your life for a bit.
When this this show's going to have an ending. So there you go.
Yeah. I'm assuming the whole, thing is going to get destroyed or something, though. I'm sure it'll be very dark. Or maybe positive. I don't know. Maybe I should watch season three, though, before
but
I start
making assumptions.
But that's the thing. Assumptions.
With the show, you don't know. Because at times, it's just really over the top and silly and borderline stupid. But then it's heartfelt. It's generally quite dark.
Yeah.
Yeah. So who knows how they're going to choose to end it. But I'm really glad for everybody involved and us, the audience, that they're able to actually end it on their terms. Mm.
All right, last story here. Miramax is working on a new Halloween TV series that will be a complete creative reset and a return to the original film.
I feel like I need more of a break from Michael Myers. That first movie is excellent, and there's been some really good Halloween films. And that first reboot movie was fantastic. And then Halloween Kills and then Halloween Ends happened. I'm still not over the last two films. I don't know if I'm ready to see him on TV.
I mean, I still say that second one, it was fun. It was a
second
big
time
down,
around.
Fun.
I liked it more. But you watched the third one. Yeah, I did. I liked it more the second time around. That first viewing, I wasn't too sure. And then the third movie. You know, I'm saying they need a break from Michael Myers. A lot of the third movie, you're like, where is he? You know, we're spending more time with his new character anyway. It was a whole thing.
It was a whole thing.
But Michael Myers on TV.
Yeah, look, it just makes me think of like, you know, like when they did the Scream TV series, they've done Child's Play.
Which is really popular.
Yeah. So look, it can work. And, you know, we've obviously had recent, maybe not so much. I feel like the Scream show was a few years after, what was the last one before that, four? And then when was the last time we had a Child's Play movie except for that modern? But that was different. That wasn't like...
So, yes, it's been, I think, was it Cult of Chucky? But I think it's been a while. And we're still...
Robotic Chucky one.
Yeah, the Mark Hamill one. Orbit Plaza.
Yeah,
I liked that. I did like that.
Yeah. I think it could work. Look, horror on TV is like its own beast. I think people tune in for it. I think we can.
I mean, they do. Like American Horror Story, you know, that's really popular. You know, horror on TV, and we're getting
a long form version of like a Michael Myers story. You know, escaping and
it could work.
Stalking and terrorizing.
I was just going to say, we're getting the Crystal Lake TV series, the Jason Voorhees series. So that's coming from Peacock. Mm. That's going to be out soon. But and again,
in my mind, even though like you just saying that, I go, you know, I put Friday the 13th up on a much higher pedestal than the Halloween franchise. Not that Halloween's terrible or anything, but I never really connected with Halloween until really the reboot in 2018. But like you mentioned the Crystal Lake show, and I'm like, yeah, I'm there. Like, I'm just automatically interested. So maybe it is just the IP. Like, Halloween.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I know. But for me, like, if you hold up the original Halloween and you hold up the original Friday the 13th, it's no competition. I'm going to go Halloween every single time. But then it's. But if we're looking at
Kevin Bacon.
Yes. If we're looking at what we've had recently, though, we've had quite a bit of Michael Myers recently, Jason Voorhees. I mean, really, when was the last time? Was it Jason X? Was that the last time? Or Freddy versus Jason? I can't remember which order they came out.
Remember
the remake.
The remake with the Michael Bay produced.
Yes. I think Jared Padalecki. You know what? It's a bloody good film, that. I reckon that could be...
It's been a minute, though.
That could be the best one that Michael Bay did.
Was it like 2013 or something?
I think so, thereabouts. I always forget as well, like you're watching it, and then like the opening title sequence, it's not like until about 15, 20 minutes into the movie where you're like, you think you're watching the movie's cast, then all of a sudden, no, they're gone. It's a whole new cast. That's a good film.
It's like you get three movies in one, like before the credits start, or like you get two movies, and then what you're watching is Friday the 13th part.
You know, I just had to look at my notes. I legit forgot what we're talking about. The Halloween TV series. We should probably move on. Let's we're talking about so many different things. I forgot Halloween on TV. Well, that's it for TV news. And now on to the recommend section.
I'm gonna recommend something that's on Netflix. And it's not an original movie because they're usually shit. It's a TV show, which they normally do really well. And this is another one. Have you seen The Gentlemen?
Oh, not yet. But
you haven't
Love that first movie. I was so looking forward to the TV series, but I've just been watching other things. My wife started it. She loves it. Looks fantastic.
It's funny that you said it. Like, this would have been a show that I would have been like, I'm interested in. I want to watch it. And then for some reason, it would just constantly be on the back burner. I can admit that to myself. But because of my wife, she was like, I'm going to start it. You're in or you're out. And I was like, all right, I'm in. Let's check out the first episode. Let's go. We've been watching it like as much as we can in between, you know, watching certain movies that we need to watch, all that kind of stuff. Like, we're squeezing it in. It is fantastic. There's a couple episodes directed by Guy Ritchie himself. Now, this is, of course, the spin-off of his film from 2019 of the same name. But we've got Theo James in the lead role. And like each episode... Like, and I'm not going to reveal too much of it in terms of anything that's going on, but it's essentially this guy, and he's trying to do something, and he just has to do something else in order to do it. Like, every episode, there's just a problem, and trying to fix it, things just get worse and worse, but at the same time, you know, like, he's getting it done. It's hilarious in not a stupid way, just like in the way that things just get so out of hand. It's funny, just like that movie. It's funny. It's really witty, which I feel like is the same as saying it's funny. It's got Guy Ritchie's DNA all over it. This is a fantastic show. I don't even want to say any more, but you know, there's still the stuff with the weed. And you know, rich people and stuff. It's all there, man. So yeah, get onto it. Like you said, you're busy, but get onto it, because I'm
right. Oh no, I will be. Honestly, I absolutely want to be watching it. So yeah, say no more. I'll definitely get onto it.
And it's got that girl from Skins, and she's like an adult now, and it makes me uncomfortable. But she's really good in this.
Yeah, a lot of people have been going back and referencing her being in Skins. Yeah, I've heard that a lot. I'll watch it soon, very soon, maybe tomorrow. But I'm going to be starting it very, very, very soon.
Maybe tomorrow, later that day.
So the last couple of shows I've been recommending podcasts. I'm not doing that today. I'm going to recommend a graphic novel, Superman, Emperor Joker, the deluxe edition. It's got a recent re-release. It's a comic or storyline that first came out in 2000, and it was published across the Superman titles. Somehow, Batman's greatest nemesis, the Joker, has received the power to reshape reality according to his own mad whims. This world is now defined by chaos and death. Metropolis's greatest superhero is Bizarro, and billionaire industrialist Lois Lane. And she's bald. It's a fun, wacky story, but it's like, I remember back when it first came out, because I was getting it in singles, in single issues, and just having Superman going up against Joker. It is so much fun. So much fun. It's just a fun read. Like, whenever they put out these collections, you just get to go back and just read those comics from however many years ago. In this case, 24 years ago. Wow. So, it's been fun revisiting the titles. The artists on this book, Ed McGuinness, Doug Mank, Mike S. Miller, Kano, writers, you've got Jeff Loeb, Joe Kelly. So much fun. It is so much fun. And then in this world, like, Superman has got the black suit, is perceived as being a villain, keeps getting trapped in Arkham. It's just bonkers. It is bonkers. It very much feels like an Elseworld tale, but it really is the real life characters, but reality has been warped for them. So there you go. Superman. Yeah. Emperor Joker.
Out of all the wacky things that you just described in that, I feel like the most outrageous thing was you've got Superman in the black suit and he just keeps getting stuck in Arkham. Like, how the hell does that happen?
Because I'm sure they explain it. Because there's a bit of depowering going on as well. It's like the classic Superman where he can leap tall buildings in a single bound. He can't quite fly. Yeah, and then as the story unravels, there's more going on, but Lois is the villain, but whenever she comes up against this villain of a character in Superman, she's like, we have a connection, I don't know why, I want to help you, but I want to destroy you. It's good, man. It's a good read. And there you go. Yep. So you can relate. It's good. There you go. It is good. Well, that's it for another episode of That Film Stew.
If you haven't already, check out our other shows, Rewind and Review and Sounds Like Comics. Each of those shows also have their own Facebook pages.
If you missed it, be sure to check out our recent review of Argyle and stay tuned for our upcoming reviews of Drive Away Dolls and Imaginary.
Thanks for joining us for another round of movie and TV news.
You've been listening to Luke.
And you've been listening to Jason.
We're the guys from That Film Stew. See you soon.